Hello there. Today we are going to talk about one of the most important parts before you even start playing the game, roster construction. My name is Matthew, and welcome to the Gamers Guild. Today, we are going to bring in a guest, but before we get to the guest, we're going to bring in who our co-host is today, Sooner. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. How's things in New York?
Things in New York are pretty good. The cold is melting away. Spring is here. My son keeps yelling out, "Winter is gone," and it's wonderful. How about you? How are your things, places?
Things are good. This is like kind of maybe the best weather time in Texas. So it storms a little bit here and there, but the weather's good. This is before it gets super hot. So weather's pretty good right now.
Yeah, when it gets super, I personally am somebody who prefers, if I had to choose, I prefer winter to summer. Some the heat makes me very uncomfortable, and at a certain point, you just can't take off enough layers. You run out of layers to take off. So I'm just uncomfortable. But I'd rather be uncomfortable looking, all stuffed up with a bunch of different coats than anything.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. There's like 2 months in the summer where like you really just can't even go outside. You have to be in air condition. It gets so hot here.
Yeah. I have a friend. My best friend is from Texas, and that's how she kind of described it as well. So we also brought in a special guest. We wanted to bring in an outside mind to not just how the Gamers Guild folk think about roster construction, because we talk on and on with each other off the pod about how we like our rosters and how we like to build them. So we wanted to bring somebody else who can bring fresh mind to it, and we brought in Ben, otherwise known as Right Mad on the Discords. How you doing, Ben?
I am well. It is in the upper part of New York, in upstate New York, still a little chilly. It's about rainy and 40 here, and we're living the dream.
Yeah. Oh, the dream. Rainy and 40. It's the dream of London, I guess.
Yes.
So we want to, before we get into anything, let's let the people out there know who you are. Who you are? Let us know who you are. How long you've been playing?
Yeah, so I have been playing MCP since the very beginning. I was one of the few folks out in the Rochester area in New York to pick up the core box right before the big bad COVID came and kind of shut everything down, made things a little bit difficult. But I've been loving it ever since. I think it was maybe season three, season four in TTS when I joined the TTS league. And one of my claim to fames was actually against Sooner when I was running Brotherhood. And that was one of my most favorite matches to date, where Sooner and I played in round one. I think that was season five, where you were still doing Wakanda, right, Sooner? I think that was.
It was a little later than season five. I think it was like season seven, something around there.
Yeah, somewhere. It's been a while. It's been
It has been a while, yeah.
I think you should have won that game.
We did learn a really important rules interaction.
I remember the juggernaut rule.
Yes, the staff of Legba, nice punch rules and interaction, which I'll have you know, I've never forgotten because of
Well,
that. So
that's how it works. That's how it works.
Yes, it
And
was a great teachable moment.
just for the listeners, the staff of Legba has a damage trigger off the wild, and then also deals damage as it is an attack. The nice punch can reduce damage off each individual source of damage. So when you get the wild trigger, you can reduce that damage and then also reduce one other damage from the attack, which would have been enough to leave Juggernaut on one, I think.
Yeah, yeah, it was a tight game. Like I said, Sooner's the professional, really came back from a round or turn two, dazing of Hulk, which was pretty awesome. At least from my perspective, it was pretty awesome.
First activation of round two, so Hulk didn't play the whole game.
which was just glorious. And so I've been playing and really I've been in every, I think I might have missed one season, since season three or four. And my other big claim to fame right now is I'm the number three Brotherhood player on Longshanks, which is really, really awesome. I've been working hard and been able to have great opponents, like Sooner and a lot of others to help coach me up. So it's been great.
So would you say that you're more competitive or casual?
So I think I definitely lean a little bit more competitive. I tend to have more fun in trying to challenge myself, of trying to make, at least for me, Brotherhood. I tend to play a little bit more casually other affiliations just because I don't know them as well, or there's not as much appeal, to playing, Avengers or whatever it may be. But when it comes to playing Brotherhood, I tend to be a little bit more competitive minded, and I have a lot of fun playing competitive, minded rosters with Brotherhood, and trying to just tweak it, make it the best, best machine that it can be.
Cool. So we've established that Brotherhood is your mainline roster, and we'll just take that into our first segment of the day. Of the pod, which is what have you been playing? So we'll start with you as the guest. What have you been playing?
Yeah, so I have actually been back on the Brotherhood train. Since the season of Lent, I took off playing Brotherhood. So I was venturing into Asgard, Wakanda, and Wintergard because I hate myself. Just more recently, I played in two tournaments and played Hydra, which was really fun. But that was a little bit more. That was a little bit more fun for me. I took it very casually. I did. I brought a roster that was really focused on trying to get the Hydra High Council off every game. And I got it three out of four times. So I'll take that as a win.
That's pretty good.
And it's just really funny.
who do you bring in?
So generally, obviously, of course, it depends on the threat value because the High Council itself is 14 threat. So depending on whatever threat it is. So my three threat add in, if it's 17, tends to be Lizard. I like Lizard. Gives you some throw mechanics, some pushes, just some control stuff. But my four threat, which is the most fun way to do it, I love playing Hydra High Council at 18 because I bring in Loki. Loki is hilarious with the High Council. There's just so much shenanigans that are happening. And then the other one that's the most meaningful to me is at 20 threat where I bring in Hulk because Hulk's a jerk. Sleeper Agent Hulk with the High Council is really funny.
I like it. So how about you, Sooner? What have you been playing lately?
I've been playing Avengers. I decided that I am going to, after Adepticon, I decided I need to stop having roster ADD and jumping around from roster to roster, or I should say affiliation to affiliation.
Cut to 2 weeks from now when we do another pod. You're playing something else.
No. Once Wakanda. So once Wakanda gets dropped, once those models come out, then I'm going full into back to Wakanda. Those models aren't going to be released, in my opinion, for a little while. So Until then, I'm going to stick with Avengers and play only Avengers. Now, that doesn't mean I'm going to play like zero games with a different affiliation, but basically, competitively, I'm just going to stick with Avengers and just kind of grind them out and see how they go. And I've already played a lot of Sam in the past, but I haven't played a lot recently. So I'm just going to play a lot of Sam Avengers and go from there. The good thing about Avengers is, even though you're playing Avengers every time, you can really, they have so much width in who they can add and whatnot that you can really play Avengers, but with so many different models.
All right. And any thoughts of dipping into Steve at all or just
nope.
Sam?
Nope. I am just going to go Sam.
No Steve. Nope. Oh, that breaks my heart.
I don't need America's ass.
As far as I'm concerned, you have America's ass.
There we go.
We figured it out.
No, I enjoy playing Sam a lot more than I enjoy playing Steve, so I'm gonna stick with just Sam.
I can understand that. I the brand of Steve that I enjoy playing is a much more casual brand of Steve. You can do a lot of fun things, but it's just not the stuff that, you know, seems to be excelling competitively right now. Because it's fun to do superpowers, but seems to be nowadays, if you want to do well with Steve, you're just kind of like huddling in a corner and waiting for the game to end.
Yeah. Now, here's the important question. Are you going to be bringing Hulkbuster?
Yeah, so in this past season, I did play Hulkbuster, and I loved him. And he definitely is going to be on my... Again, that's kind of the beauty of Avengers, right? Like, I can, you know, if I want to go to the shop and play some games, I don't need to bring Hulk. I can bring Hulkbuster and play him. So, yeah, I absolutely love Hulkbuster. I think he's, I actually think he's a really good model. I just think, unfortunately, Hulk overshines him a little bit. But if Hulk wasn't there, I think people would be playing Hulkbuster a lot more. And I think he's good. And, yes, he is going to be played.
And the best model in the game.
He is the best looking model in the game, absolutely. I have to paint him. So I just got him recently, I believe it or not. And I just painted him. I airbrushed him all red, so I gotta, you know, go ahead and paint him. So of course, once I paint him, I have to get him on the table.
And I need to see what it looks like.
Yeah.
I'll show you once I'm done.
Cool.
All I need to know is that you don't bring him to NashCon, because my last year, you know, I traveled from upstate New York, go down to the, you know, beautiful Tennessee, wonderful time, and brought this wonderfully tuned Brotherhood list, expecting all of the other Malekith shenanigans. And round one, I get matched up into a Hulkbuster led Avengers team. Like, what is that? No one does that. So if you bring Hulkbuster, I just know for a fact I'll get you round one, and that I don't want that. So please.
Yeah, that's beautiful. You know, Luke Cage, he's only taking basically one damage off your throws, no matter what.
Oh, stop it. Stop it.
Or zero. Or flashbacks. Zero. He could take zero.
Yeah.
Yes, that did happen.
But, I will be playing Hulkbuster, and very likely, unless Wakanda gets released, I'll very likely be playing Avengers in NashCon. Spoiler alert. So.
Oh, got to start teching.
Right
gotta
now.
Got to tech for the suitor.
4 months in the 4 months in the future. Go ahead.
Let's do
you
it.
You know,
yeah.
It's never too early to start. So for me, I have been still, I think I'm a man of two affiliations right now. So far, I've been playing Asgard in my quest, my off-season quest to reclaim lesser played affiliations. I find Asgard to be an incredibly frustrating affiliation to play. It gives you a lot of emotions. Some of them are great, some of them are bad. I actually have a pretty good record with Asgard in the games I've played. But I spend almost all of the game cursing at Thor and then somehow winning. I don't know Beta Ray Bill, the way I look at it is Beta Ray Bill is your 5 threat leader, and Thor is your sometimes good four threat that you have to bring.
Yeah, pretty sounds like Asgard.
Yeah, that checks out. Math checks out.
The other affiliation that I'm kind of looking into, but I haven't really gotten the feet under me, is Foes. Mostly because I am in a situation where I might be getting some in-person games, some casual games sometime in the future. So I kind of want to paint up my Foes and have an awesome looking table. And they're the best at doing that.
They do have great models.
They are really fun. Shane Smith is one of my practice partners. And so I've run into the Foes shenanigans for quite some time now. So yeah, they're a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've only played like one game with them. The one game was, I think, like 2 years ago. It was against Sooner. He was playing Sam, and I won because Lizard had a god tail whip that dazed War Machine, and I still remember it to this day.
No, it was Carnage. Carnage, no, what
Carnage did other things, but it was that Lizard who whipped that War Machine at the end. Carnage did explode, no, but that's expected. I wouldn't have won.
That was the answer to Sam's stream back in the day. I remember everybody used to be like, "Oh, there's not an answer." Carnage was the answer.
Carnage was the answer, and Carnage didn't even do as great. But, you know, he dazed like 2-3 models in an activation.
I think he dazed 3 models in an activation. I think that's pretty good.
Was that pre-Doomsday prophecy a nerf, or?
Oh, yeah, that was his prophecy was doomed.
Okay, yeah, those were some glorious days where, yeah, there will be Carnage and Doomsday prophecies, and you're getting like 6 attacks off. Yeah, it's great.
Yes, I was up like 11-4, and then Carnage went and the next round it was like 11-10 or something.
It was also a game that I just kept like failing on my flips on those whatever the spider portals, and you were like apologizing. You're like, oh, it stinks when the dice are like, that's the reason why you're winning a game.
Yeah, man, I had to make you feel good about yourself, and then all of a sudden you just have to go and do Dirty Carnage things to me.
Dirty Carnage. Carnage, another model I do love. I loved my paint job on him. Anyway, enough reminiscing of the one time I beat Sooner. We're going to move on to our main topic of the episode. So today we are going to... I kind of view this as sort of a series of like the stages of the game. Not necessarily they're going to be back-to-back in these episodes, but it's kind of... As you are working through a game, a lot of times people kind of just, you know, especially when you're newer to the game, what do you do? What is your mindset? I feel stuck at every step of the game. And how do we do this? How do we do that? The first thing before anything else is roster construction. Sometimes roster construction is even before you buy models, because you might pick a roster just to decide what models you want to go. And we have talked a lot about affiliation breakdowns to help you decide what your rosters are going to be, but we're going to go into sort of an in-depth how we approach building rosters, and what is on our minds, what are we thinking, how are we approaching in terms of competitive, how are we approaching in terms of casual. We're going to just kind of give a brief outline of how we start building rosters, like when we're at the blank page, staring at our roster builder, what is in our minds when we are building a roster. And we're going to start off with the grand poopah of them all. Sooner, tell us about your general approach to building rosters.
That's a good nickname because I am pretty old. So, so kind of a brief... overview. I won't go into detail of it. Basically, so of course I pick an affiliation. So I'm mostly a one affiliation guy. Almost all the lists I build are single affiliation, because I am a pretty firm believer that at this point, almost everything can be a single affiliation, because there's so much out, you can build the weaknesses you have. So I pick an affiliation. That's number one. Number two, I'll then take a look at the affiliation and kind of pick like a core set of affiliation characters that are going to be played most games. Usually this is anywhere from about 4 to 6 characters that I want to look at and say, okay, these characters are going to be the characters I, you know, of course want to have. And then from there, I will look and say, okay, what is my strategy, overarching strategy from this list? Am I playing narrow attrition? Am I playing wide attrition? Am I playing control? And from there, I'll kind of build a strategy, and then I will then add models that maybe are not affiliated that really help with my strategy of what I'm trying to build to. So if I'm playing a control, if I'm trying to build a control list, I'll try to add models who have either guaranteed pushes or models who have throws, things to that effect. And then once I'm kind of done there, I will then go into, all right, I need some models, 1 or 2 models that are good into Malekith or that are good into Thanos, basically the big bads, the meta giants who, if I go to a competitive event, they're likely to be seen at the top tables. So I always want to make sure I have 1 or 2 models or counters, which are really good into them that I can play. And then from there, I maybe at this point have 1 slot left. I will take a look, or maybe 2 slots left. I'll say, take a look and see if there's any weaknesses that I need to shore up. If my team has any weaknesses to any certain thing, maybe it be a map deep pay to flip or an e-map straight down the middle fight. And I'll try to kind of add a last second model or something like that to that. And then, of course, I'll go into my team tactics cards and crisis and kind of pick those and pick which ones I think will be best. Obviously, with the crisis, I'll have probably built my squad a certain way, whether it be attrition affiliation and I want all ease, or whether I'm going like Sam Avengers and I want to go wide and play B's and D's, something to that effect. And that's kind of the overarching way I choose my list. My tactics cards, I'll kind of look and say, what do I need help with? I tend to get a lot of defensive tactics cards just because that's kind of in my nature. But that's kind of the overarching of how I build a list.
So one thing that sticks out to me as a specific, and at the risk of dating this podcast, not being completely evergreen, one of the things that I think people struggle with when building their rosters is the what they view as the concessions that they sometimes have to make in their rosters. And when you said in one of your steps, your overall outline, if you would, is that you start looking at the meta and sort of pick, you have picks that deal with certain threats. Can you give me just, or give us a bit of a example of what in this meta currently, what would you try to insert into your roster to be as a counter meta to deal with a problem in the meta?
Absolutely. So the first one I look at is Malekith. I think Malekith, is a super big bad right now, and he's very hard to deal with. He's very easy for people to play. He's a point and click model. So he's very easy to play. So you need stuff that can reduce some of his effectiveness. I'll give you kind of an example. I'm playing Avengers right now. So I look at my roster and I say, okay, what is there anybody in affiliation who I'm already kind of debating on that can help me with this? And of course, in Avengers, Luke Cage is great into it. I can heroes for higher end. If he doesn't one-shot me, I can then too dangerous to ignore. And he's attacking Luke Cage with both of his attacks. So he can basically kind of help mitigate that. Another model, for example, who can kind of do the same thing is Red Guardian. He has a similar team tactics card. He can also throw Malekith with his card. If he has enough power, he also will pay for counting blanks, so it's very hard for Malekith to one-shot him. When you're dealing with a big bad like Malekith, you're basically just trying not to get one-shot. Malekith is going to kill you. He has the best dice in this game. But you just, if you can make him do two attacks to kill you, that is 100% a win in your book. So I pick models like that. Models that have martial artists are very good in the Malekith because his pierce doesn't work. And I mean, obviously you block more whenever you have martial artists, and Malekith's main attack is within range two. And then I'll also try to mitigate it with tactics cards. So something like sacrifice is good in the Malekith because, you know, Malekith wants to prioritize who he's taking out. So if you can adjust that, that's really good. So that's kind of an example of what I mean when I'm looking into that. Other models like Thanos, the big bad Thanos, either Hulkbuster or Iron Man, it's real good because Helios is great in taking out the big bads. So you can, again, I'm playing Avengers right now, so like Iron Man and can nuke either Thanos or Malekith. Playing Avengers, Sam can play Bird of Prey into Malekith. That's a 7 dice reroll all attack, so that's a really good attack to try to do damage. So those type of things are how I look at it and try to mitigate. Other models that are good into, say, Malekith, all the exceptional healing models are real good because obviously exceptional healing is really good. It usually buys you at least another attack that he has to kill you with. So those are really the main things I look at into the two big bads, which is Malekith and Thanos, in my opinion.
All right. Thanks for that insight. Let's move on to Ben. Tell us what's your just a general outline of how you approach building rosters?
One of the first questions that I ask myself is, what type of event am I going to? Is this an LCQ? Is this a rated tournament? Is this a non-rated tournament where maybe I can expect, some more casual folks? That's the first question that I ask myself. And depending on how that answer is, then I'll go to the next one, which is, what is my goal for that specific event? For example, this last tournament that I was in, I wanted to try something different than Brotherhood. I wanted to play Hydra, recognizing that there was some competitive nature. But my sub goal wasn't to win the whole event. My goal was, how many times can I trigger Hydra High Council? So sometimes when I do roster construction, depending on the actual event itself, that helps me formulate an idea, a plan for the roster construction. So for example, this Hydra High Council list is, what models can I add that will help me achieve this goal? And then very similar to what Sooner was saying, you've got to be aware of, some of the meta pieces. My big problem for a long time was Senior Thanos and Guardians. And I was just, running into a brick wall. And then I eventually found out that, Malekith kind of solves that problem. So you put Malekith into the roster, and all of a sudden, now one of the team's, greater weaknesses is actually not so bad anymore. So that's one of the big questions of how do I, address what is the weakness. I tend to actually go with that first of, what are our weaknesses after I kind of look at the goals that I'm trying to accomplish with this event and or roster. And then I just kind of fill it in, in between there. I don't know if Sooner, we mentioned this earlier, kind of this affiliation ADD. I have roster ADD. I go back and change my roster like 100 times. It's awful. Of like, oh, well, what about this? Oh, what about this? Oh, what about this?
Yeah, no, I feel you. I'm a noodler.
It's bad. And I am very thankful that my wife does not let me travel with more than what I need for a roster. So it's like, nope, you are settling before we traveled to go anywhere. Like, there is no last minute changes, because she knows that if I have that opportunity, if I brought everything with me, I'm going to fiddle with it right up until the, you know, into the last hour.
I almost do that. I mean, when I was doing X-Wing, I would force myself. I wouldn't let myself bring my like whole collection, but I would bring my book of cards. And I would bring a potential second list to bring, just in case I changed my mind at the last second, which is not ideal. But
yeah, I mean, I used to do that, and I've always kicked myself for it. So being able to kind of get settled, get as many games with those with that roster, you know, one of the things that's underrated, and I don't know if this maybe overlaps into maybe like another, you know, another cast, but you know, getting as many reps in with a roster really helps me solidify it. And it feels like cheating, you know, because obviously you're past the roster construction point because you're playing a game. But at the same time, you know, especially when we get those high tier, you know, competitive events, you've got to put the practice in. You know, that was one of the big things that, you know, a lot of these top tier guys, you know, like Sooners, like Pat Dunford, you know, all these other. So that's something that has helped me recognize, all right, well, now I've got a problem. I've got an issue. How do I address that the most faithful way that we can?
No, you're definitely right, Ben. And you know, it's definitely not 100% on roster construction itself, but it is sort of like, you know, all these different stages of the game kind of like interweave with each other. You have to practice. You can't just make a roster and set it and forget it and go. You need to stress test it. Once you get your initial idea of what you're doing with a roster, you definitely need to kind of put it to the metal, try it out, see how it works. Does it do what you want it to do? Sometimes you just do it against just a regular casual game. Sometimes you do a targeted practice off against something that's more meta. Is this good to X-Men as an example? You know, you got to do all those things and see where its strengths are and where its weaknesses are, and then adjust your roster to affix those things. And that's on the competitive side. Like, obviously, if you're just doing a casual night, it's not that big a deal. But if you're trying to get yourself prepped, you need to figure out, you want to give yourself the best chance of success. And the best way to do that is to solidify your strengths and bolster your weaknesses.
And one of the other, you know, favorite ways that I've done roster construction is I like to call the managing star process, which is, hey, I want to play with this new shiny model that I got. Maybe I just painted them up. Maybe I just, you know, thought of a crazy, you know, theme or a what if, you know, scenario of how do I make this character just be bonkers? One of my favorite things a couple months ago was, how do I make Deadpool bonkers?
And, good luck.
You know, putting Deadpool in Weapon X with Chimichangas and the dossier, all of a sudden Deadpool is like really kind of crazy. It was really fun. You know, have some rerolls. He can heal. He heals like three. It was really fun. And so that's obviously a little bit more for casual events or a casual night of, hey, I just want to go. We just built Immortal Hulk. So that's something that I'll be, you know, messing around with is, you know, what's a roster that I can create that's going to make Immortal Hulk shine.
Yeah. And that's also valuable. Not everything is, you know, straight competitive. We don't live and die only by what the next event is. Sometimes you just want to go to the shop and make one character shine.
Yep. Yeah, and I think that's important because, you know, one of the things that we realize, what I love about MCP is, you know, that some person's favorite character may not be the most meta piece, right? And I think it's actually really interesting when they can construct a roster to make that model shine. It may not be the best roster in the world in terms of competitive, but if they're having fun playing with their favorite model and making that model do just some bonkers stuff, that's great. And I think that's something that as a community, we should and can celebrate. And that's really awesome to see. So I've always encouraged people to do that. And sometimes maybe you find something where maybe you can sneak a couple, you know, wins at, you know, at a big tournament. like I said, it's fun for me to do that. And I just encourage people to think about that in roster construction too, is, you know, how can we make one specific model shine?
You know, sometimes it's just nice to be like, well, you know, let's see if I can make OG Daredevil work.
Right, right.
I can't.
I've been trying it with Colossus, and it's been rough. Colossus is my favorite, you know, Marvel hero, and you know, I'm trying, guys. I'm trying.
Sooner, you had some success with Colossus, didn't you?
A little bit with X-Force, but I think it was more the models around him than Colossus himself.
Right. Could you cat mouse him?
No. When he first came out, I was playing I did a little bit of Wolverine with him for the old fastball special.
Yeah.
And then, no, I was playing him a little bit with X-Force. And again, I think it was he just kind of sat there and was a dud. Well, other models were a little better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did it with recently with X-Men and Emma, and had Colossus move medium turn one. I was like, guys, look, Colossus can move medium. Look at my boy.
But can he move speed 5? That's really the question.
I don't know. He could dream.
For me, I think I take a little bit of a different approach. I'm a little more analytical in how I look at a lot of rosters. And I also don't get a ton of time to play. Like, I don't get to play like 10 games a week as, like, you know, the Morgan Reeds of the universe were doing. But I'm a little more focused, and I do
10
play
games a week. Morgan Reed was playing 10 games in a night.
That's true. For me, it was kind of like, the way I would approach is sort of, so I pick an affiliation. This is, I'm also a mono affiliation person, as I said in our mono versus duo episode. And I would start off by building on what people have done before me. So I would look at other rosters. I wouldn't necessarily straight net deck, because for me, if I just take a straight roster, then I don't really understand it. But I'll take, like, if I'm going to do foes, I'm going to see, all right, let me see what people are doing with foes in the latest, you know, large tournament. And I'll look at some foes rosters and see some similarities and see what, and try to decipher what their game plan is. What are they trying to do here? Is this like a heavy extract control that they're playing on here? Are they trying to be attrition? What is Malekith doing here? Oh, of course he's Malekith. That's why he's there. I kind of take out things like Malekith, and then my next stage that I kind of do with these rosters is then I start finding the parts of these rosters that I like. Like, I like that this person does this with this character, but I don't necessarily like everything they do. But I like in this other roster that they do this thing. And I feel like in a certain scenarios, I can play with this. So I start piecing together different scenarios and different matchups and different crises in my head and what I would like. And it becomes kind of a really chaotic, jumbled mess of a lot of characters on my Cerebro roster builder. If anyone had listened to the Sam roster building episode, you can tell we started with like 21 characters and we had to whittle down to 10. You know, so that tends to happen to me a lot, where I have like at least 15 characters and 18 tactics cards. And I'm just trying to then figure out from there, what do I want to do with this roster? Now that I have all the characters that I want in the roster, and then I throw in some spicy picks that I think I like just based off the leadership, then I'm kind of like whittle down and say, well, what can I do with this? What is my game plan? Why is Rhino here? What is Rhino doing? What do I have? I have these out of affiliation pieces. Do I want to have Logan in my foes, or do I want to have Voodoo in my foes? You know, like, I have to make these kind of decisions where I start whittling down the pieces until I kind of am happy with a 10 person roster. And from there, the tactics cards kind of show the way for themselves after that point. Once I know what characters, then I can kind of figure out what character-specific tactics cards I want, and I already know that the team-affiliated tactics cards are chosen, and then I'm kind of figuring out what are the generic tactics cards that fill those last couple slots in. And so once I have that roster kind of set, then I kind of do what Ben was saying. You know, you take the roster out for a spin, and then you I realize very quickly that some things just do not work. Like, I go up there and I'm like, there's just no way that I'm ever playing this character in any situation, because now I'm realizing at this point the points don't work well. They don't mesh well. And I realize I have this big gaping hole that I really need somebody who's going to fix it. I need to throw Agent Venom into this roster now for whatever reason, because he's good into X-Men, and I just faced an X-Men roster. And then that's sort of the evolution, how the evolution of my roster start. I kind of like start a roster, and then I make like an evolved roster, and then like a 2.0 roster and a 3.0 roster, until eventually I find a place that I'm happy if I want to take it to like an event or a tournament. And then of course I'm always fiddling, as I said before, but that's kind of the pathway that I take. Because I don't necessarily know exactly what a roster wants to do or an affiliation wants to do. And I don't have 50 games to figure out how Foes works the best. So it's better for me to kind of decipher the code of other people's and then put together the DNA to create my little Jurassic Park dinosaurs. If that reference makes sense to anyone.
I get it.
Jurassic Park. Yeah. Love it.
And that's it. That's how I roll. So I'm going to ask some questions of the both of you, and I'll put in my feedback as well, but just kind of different questions approaching roster construction. And one of them is, what is the most valuable feature you look for when you're building a roster in your characters? Like, is there some kind of required element? You don't necessarily have to have it in all your characters, but you're like, in this roster, I need to have at least one size 4 character throw. There was a time in a meta that I decided that I needed to have at least one size 4 character throw in all my rosters. That was required. Is that something that you have in your rosters? We'll start with you, Ben.
That is a big thing for me. You know, I think Sooner had hinted at it, you know, as you kind of breaking down the roster, you know, you've got your attrition pieces, you've got your, your control pieces. So for me, you know, one of the have to have pieces is and you named it, Matt, was, you know, what's a size 4 throw? Now playing Brotherhood, I usually don't have to worry about this because I'm playing Juggernaut and I can just yeet anybody, you know, or size long, right? You know, so I love that, you know, it makes my life a lot easier where I could just, you know, look at that scary cat and just throw him long, right? But often, one of the other things that I look towards in my roster is how can I fix dice? Look, the dice are evil. Can we all just agree on that? The dice are evil.
They're glorious and evil at the same time.
It's yeah. Just, you know, I don't know how many times I actually just took Pyro out of my Brotherhood roster. Because I love, you know, I love Firewall, but as many times as I needed a stupid wild to just happen, hey, can you just get a wild for me and things could really start clicking? Nope. You know, and I don't have the space to bring in someone like a Shuri, who's one of my favorite models, you know, and she was one of the top splash models for a long time. And she's kind of, you know, fallen to the middle of the road now. But I think she's great. She's got auto pushes for size 3, which is, you know, 80. I think I did the math a while ago. It was like, it's like 84% of MCP models are size 3 or under, right? So that's pretty good where you could just auto push, you know, those folks. And you have some dice consistency. So that's what I look for.
What about you, Sooner?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's anything that is you have to have. I think certainly a size 4 throw is certainly valuable. And it's something I look for, but I don't think it's mandatory. I think some of it goes to your strategy. You know, you're playing shield or you're just trying to shoot stuff to death. I don't value it as much as if I'm playing maybe a different roster. But I mean, I personally look for multiple, really two big things. Probably the most important thing to me is having some displacement in the roster, whether that be some pushes, whether that be some throws, and you would like for having at least multitude of them to be size three or less, at least, because when you just run into a certain list like a Criminal Syndicate, Kingpin, you really have to have some displacement to really a lot of times hang in that game, especially if dice are not going your way. So definitely having some displacement in my roster is probably the most important thing I look for when I'm building a roster, unless, like I said, I'm building a pure Shadowlands Daredevil kill list, then it might not be as important, where I just want to roll dice. The other thing and this is more of a personal thing, I try to have some models that are difficult to kill. I personally value that very highly in my MCP playing. So I try to, if I can, if I have an option of putting a character or characters who are a little harder to kill, a lot of times I look for survivability. So those would be the main things I look for on features. But I think it really just boils down to, again, what's your specific strategy and what are you trying to do? Like I said, if I'm building a Shadowlands Daredevil list, which I ran that list last year with a lot of good success, I had no survivable characters. They were all squishy as can be outside of Shadowlands.
Absolute paper.
Yeah. So... it really depends. I just took a bunch of models who roll a lot of dice, get a lot of rerolls, and I just killed stuff. So it really just depends on the roster specifically. But the big things I like to look for are displacement, number one, and number two, some survivability.
So for me, displacement is number one for me, as I kind of showed my hand a little bit in that suggestion and that example. But additionally, something that I'm always looking at, and again, obviously Sooner's caveat is a very important one. Sometimes you have a roster where you're just like, well, this is just not important because it's not part of my game plan. But one of the things I'm always looking at when I'm building a roster is, do I have some kind of some kind of midline grab and run? Not because of the old days when you kind of just wanted to grab and run and that was, you're just trying to run away. But there are a lot of boys out there that are very aggressive at the midline. And it's not just the Malekiths. You got your Malekiths. You got your Logans. You got the Shadowland Daredevil people. You have the Guardians people. And if you get a priority and there's a sweet looking, you know, extract out there in the middle line, you want to grab it. But if you put somebody out there, there's a good chance that that character is just going to be dazed and cough up the objective to your opponent. So I'm always thinking about having at least one piece that has the ability to run up, grab, and not just sit there like a dead duck, a soon-to-be dead duck. Beta Ray Bill, as an example, when I'm playing Asgard, he's my grab and go. You know, sometimes I think about things in terms of, I was thinking about Logan for a while, but the fact that they have to be within range two for him to do is got to get some air to run away is a little difficult. But, you know, a lot of times I think about those Midnight Suns being able to move up and grab and go. That's one of the key pieces I think about almost every roster I have, unless I'm playing like Shield, which then I'm not going after that midpoint. I'm waiting for them to go after the midpoint.
Yeah, I think that definitely is something you should look for in your rosters. And I think it's very recently become very important for that. It didn't used to be like that. You could kind of safely walk up and get middle stuff. I do think you can just do that a lot of times with smart activation order and a tanky character. But I completely agree. I think that has become much, much more important nowadays, having somebody to grab the middle.
It used to be you could just run Black Panther right to the middle and you'd be fine. But nowadays, that's not so good anymore. I guess the question you should posit yourself is, are you a team that is going to grab from the middle, or are you a team that's going to kill the middle? And that's a question I have to ask myself in making my decisions. So
I do think, though, and this is kind of a tangent, I do think sometimes I like to just go with a tanky character because it is a very dice dependent play. A lot of times them trying to go into a tanky character, and if the dice don't work out for them, then they are very out of position and you are usually up in scenario, and it's really an advantage you. Now, obviously there's the flip side of that where dice go their way and they just daze your character and you're in a tough situation. But I do think if you do it with a tanky character, it can certainly benefit you if things go your way.
Yeah. If I could piggyback off of that sooner, like I said, I mean, that's how I play Juggernaut. You know, I think a lot of people, you know, have the same mindset, you know, but you could do some of the, you know, with Mystique led leadership, you could do some, you know, the center grab runaway, you know, stuff. But, you know, if you're playing Wholesome Brotherhood, you're playing Magneto Brotherhood, right? And that is Juggernaut just going up, grabbing that middle extract and saying, "Go! What are you going to do? Hit me?" Right? And that's, I think it's awesome. I appreciate, you know, that. And like I said, you know, I try to do the math, you know, going, all right, on average, you should maybe, you know, do this much damage. And then, of course, then you look real dumb when you have, you know, a Juggernaut dazed on, you know, the bottom of turn one. Right. You're like, oh, well, all right. Sometimes that happens. and then other times, you know, like you said, they're really out of position, have set you up for a really wonderful, you know, top of turn two, you know, because Juggernaut's in a great position. You've made him, you know, fed him a couple power, you know, Bill's, you know, a character like that too. So that's how I like to play too. You know, setting up those tanky characters and just kind of asking, well, what are you going to do? Hit me? And then they do.
Yeah, that's the name of the game, is to hit you.
Right.
So,
well, hey, look, I'm all about the slap or be slapped, right? This is why we play Magneto.
True. So what type of rosters do you consider to have fun playing sooner?
I enjoy all kinds of different roster constructions. I'm probably most known for going wide, and I do very much enjoy going wide. For the listeners, going wide just means, you know, at that certain threat level, you are having probably more characters than your opponent. Usually, you know, you're going 5, 6, or 7 wide, depending on the threat level. So I do enjoy that. You're less reliant on getting bad dice with one character. You know, sometimes if you're playing a Malekith and your Malekith has bad dice, which is pretty rare, but it can happen. You don't feel it as bad when you're going wide. You know, all your little puny 3-threat characters, what, you know, it's okay for one of them to have some bad rolls and just get killed right off the board or something like that. So I enjoy playing wide list. I enjoy all the challenges with everything. I enjoy the challenges sometimes of playing narrow. But if I had to choose, going wide would be my favorite.
How about you, Ben?
I already alluded. Slap or be slapped, right? We do wide slaps, tall slaps, side slaps, up slaps, down slaps, all of them. You know, I'm in it to slap. And in all seriousness, I really do enjoy just rolling dice, right? I think I had a hard time when the meta was grab stuff, run away.
Yeah.
Right. That was just the non-interaction stuff. Haha, I win. You know, that's, you know, that stuff really grinds my gears, you know. You know, we come to the table to throw some dice at each other, you know. So that's how I like to play the game. I also understand that some people like to do the other, you know, like control, like the runaway stuff. And but yeah, I'm all for the slaps, man.
Yeah, I'm more of a player who likes, I think I side a little bit on Sooner's type of, like, I like to play wide. I like to roll dice too. So I guess I'm a baby of the two of you. I really wanted to like Web Wars because so many of the characters are characters that I love. Probably the most of the characters in there I love. So, but the play style just doesn't jive with my neural pathways very well. So I always like the idea of attacking to do something. I did like Wakanda a while because you were attacking to do something. So even if the attack didn't work out the way you wanted to, you got something out of it. So that tends to be the type of thing, but I like to go as wider as possible. I don't, even though I'm playing Asgard right now, I tend to not deal with threats, you know, leaders that are higher than four, because I want to jam as many in there as possible. So one interesting question that always comes across in discussion is this balance of playing something that wins to playing something you enjoy. And I know that's a lot of times for people that kind of coincides, that they want to play something that wins. Winning is fun. And that's true for a lot of very, very competitive players. But also, I've always found that if you are compromising the boring competitive play choice and all of your choices in your roster are specifically designed to just drain the fun out of the game as much as possible for the sole purpose of only winning, for me, I feel like that's almost kind of just a waste of my 2 hours, because I'm just, you know, in the end, I get a win, and then in the grand scheme of the heat death of the universe, it means nothing. But in the moment, I want to just enjoy all these different comic book elements and rolling dice and the highs and the lows and all that stuff. And I kind of want to pose this kind of idea to you two about, when you're looking at your rosters, how do you strike that balance between creating something that's going to be successful in a competitive setting and win, but also something that you are going to enjoy playing for the next 8 to 10 hours? We'll start with you, Sooner.
Well, I do both. I meld both. I am known with a lot of the guys that I chat with as kind of like a unicorn, because I refuse to play certain models. Just pretty much flat out refuse to play them. I've never played Thanos in a competitive game because I refuse to play him. I think he's too good. I think he needs a nerf. Malekith is similar. I did take Malekith to an LVO. I sold my soul and took him to LVO qualifier just because I wanted to get the win, and I certainly did that. It was one of the least amount of fun I've had playing MCP, honestly. And it was, and I won the tournament, and I played guys I like, but it was just not fun. I mean, I didn't have a game closer to 16-6 at an LVO qualifier because Malekith just did what Malekith does. And that's not enjoyable for me. So I always, you know, when I'm building a competitive roster, kind of like Ben said earlier, you know, if I'm just going to my local game store for game night, I'm not going to bring out my, you know, trying to win a convention list. I'm going to play a thematic list. But outside of that, like if I'm trying to win at a tournament, I am going to make as competitive a list I can with those kind of details that I said earlier in the cast. But I'm going to do it with, like, you know, I'm not going to play Mal. There's just models I'm just not going to play. I refuse to play them because I just don't think they're good for the game. Basically, I think Malekith unfortunately is bad for the game. and I'm not here to bash on characters, although it's kind of sounded like that.
It's exactly what you just did.
Yeah. But to answer that is I try to build it as competitive as I can. And I will do that with some small restrictions, like not playing certain characters. But outside of that, I mean, all bets are off. I'm trying to synergize my list as best that I can, to really amp up and make it very competitive. If that answered your question.
No, it absolutely does. And I feel you. I haven't played any. The only Malekith game I've ever played was a game for somebody else who was, doing a practice game for their roster, and they wanted to try into Malekith, and I played Malekith, and I don't think I gave him a pretty great showing because, you know, it's a character I don't really play. But also, I think I won that game because Malekith is busted. But I did play Thanos a bit for in Shield, but I felt that was sort of like my investigation of not just playing the normal Thanos that everyone was playing. I was trying to play more of a discounted-ish, still a threat, but not the normal senior Thanos, to try and play that out in an affiliation that you don't see him very often. So I thought that was fun. But I agree. There are certain models that I just don't seem fun, or they just don't seem like they would be very fun for my opponent. And if none of us is having fun, then why play that model?
Yeah. And just to be clear, I have zero problems with other people that are trying their best to win, you know, stuff, whether it be, a convention or something like that. And they play these models. Like, I get it. It's part of the game. They release these models. There's no like ill will towards them or anything. You know, I might give them some crap about it, but I mean, I completely understand that they're playing what is best in the game to try to win the tournament. And I get that. And I understand that. And so I understand why people get it. And there's certainly no like ill will towards them or anything like that for doing that.
I don't know. At NashCon beat me up outside, you know, in the parking lot one time, cause I thought
that's right. Well, I mean, I just do that for fun usually, but you know,
so. Yeah. And I think, nobody should, we're not taking any, slights at any kind of players who want to do it, cause everyone's definition of what they have fun doing is different. And like I even said, when I brought up this conversation, some people just enjoy the concept of winning. And some people just genuinely enjoy the puzzle that a character like Malekith would create for them and how they can find the different play patterns. And there's no judgment. One of my favorite players that I played with in X-Wing, he would take like the most dominating, overpowered lists, and he would play them into newer players. And I would go up to him and say, why are you playing this list? You're obviously going to win. It's a casual game. What enjoyment are you getting out of playing this? And he looked at me and he said, looked me straight in the eyes, with a cold, dead stare. And he said, I learned how to be more efficient. Woof. And he enjoyed doing that. And you know what? That's what he enjoyed. He came to the casual night to have fun. And that was his version of fun. So Ben, how about you? How do you find that balance?
I just got to say woof again. Yeah. I think it is important to say that having fun at the expense of others, I think we really need to have kind of that like self-check in the mirror, of like why we're the gathered community. But that's just me. That may sound judgmental, but it's meant
because it is. Because it's meant definition of judgmental.
Yeah, it's meant to be. You suck if you want to be that way, but I also will still love you sooner. No, I'm just kidding. So for me, and maybe I approach it a little bit differently, because I also play Malekith more than both of you. I want to try to have fun with the models that I want to make work. Or like what I was saying, like, I want to have this rock star character. I know that, you know, I talked a little bit before, and some people may know me, you know, out in the community for trying to make Winter Guard work. So I pounded my head against the wall, and suffered with, you know, some really kind of subpar, you know, models in Winter Guard. But to do that, I had to bring Malekith, right? Maybe it had to is too strong of a word, but I felt the need to bring Malekith to maybe, all right, how do I counterbalance this? I brought Red Skull too, right? You know, to say, okay, how do I make this work? And that was fun for me, you know, of trying to crack the code.
And to be fair, you only have two models in your affiliation.
Yes, it does make it a little bit hard when you play with two models, you know, and then one is Bucky. And then the third, yeah, your third one is Bucky. So it was, you know, it was interesting. So that was fun for me until, you know, eventually, and maybe I'm not alone in this, but you just kind of hit a brick wall. Of like, okay, I think I've done that for a while. Like I said, I took a break from Brotherhood for a while. Just, I love Brotherhood. Brotherhood will always be, you know, my favorite affiliation. But I wanted to branch out and try some other stuff. It also tries to help, you know, bring a different lens to the game. I have like zero interest in playing Shield. Shield is like not interesting to me as an affiliation.
I love Shield.
And yet there are some people who are, yeah, really love Shield. And I'll still try to play them just so I can try to maybe figure out what they're trying to do so that when I go to, you know, an LVO event or a convention, you know, like Adepticon or something like that, then I can maybe go, oh, okay, well, maybe I'm not the best Shield player in the world, but I know what maybe they're trying to do just by being on that side of the fence for a little bit. So, I think that's an important part, you know, of playing MCP too, is trying to figure out what the other side. And so I've done that. I've made rosters where how can I make the most efficient Avengers team, you know, and how do I play that versus how it's played against me, and you know, what does that look like?
Well, you know, that is an important, and it's kind of a tangent, but it's an important point when you're looking at your rosters and playing your rosters. And that kind of goes to this, you know, testing the next stage after you first build the roster, going out and playing it. And in the fact that, you know, the same player who we talked about, who was trying to be efficient, something that was also great is that these players are important, because when you go to an event, you're not only going to be playing somebody who's just like, I threw this roster together to try to figure things out. Nope, I am going. Some of them are taking the big stuff. They're bringing the Malekith and the Mystique and the everything to destroy the world. And if you are not prepared against those players, then you are going to lose. And one thing that was great about that player in my X-Wing community is that he made us all better, because we played him and he crushed us every time, but we became better. We went to tournaments and we all did really, really well. And we won tournaments outside of our community because he, you know, steel sharpens steel. So there's definitely no judgment to people who want to play the most OP things for the purposes of winning, because that is also part of the game. So for a fun roster, you're not taking it to a competitive event. What do you like to include in your fun rosters? Ben, how about you start?
You know, for me, I love the buddy tactic cards. So, you know, like the Thunder Wave with Thor and Cap, you know, those tactic cards, where it's two characters, you know, doing a thing together. Can we just talk about the best one, which is Sibling Rivalry? I love that one, where Thor just yeets Loki.
It's a legit good card.
It's a legit good card, but it's also fun. Like it's also just a fun card. So yeah, when I'm taking a fun roster, I really try to jam as many of those in as possible as I can.
Have you combined the sibling rivalry with the Meet My Executioner?
No, but I'll tell you what I did do once, which was really funny. I did sibling rivalry with Fastball Special. And it was just like, the roster was Team Yeet. So it was just Yeet a friend, right? You just, if you're not Yeeting a friend, you're wrong. So it was.
Is that unaffiliated? That you
guys it, was it was unaffiliated.
I was going to say you could do it at 20 threat, but yeah. That's about it.
Yeah, that was it was an unaffiliated 20 threat. It was like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, it's Team Yeet, man.
No, you could do it. Let's see. You could do it affiliated at 20, but that's about it. That's yeah, the only affiliate.
I don't think it was affiliated when I ran it. I think because I threw in somebody else in there with just some other throw shenanigans. It was fun.
Oh boy. Okay.
Sometimes you gotta throw something, you know.
Sometimes you gotta throw somebody, you know.
So I mean, I think obviously this is a very subjective question because, you know, what do some people consider fun is not. For me, I consider a fun roster is I make it very thematic. Like when I'm playing X-Men, I pretty much put only X-Men in there, which I know now is pretty competitive, but it was not always. Or like if I'm playing X-Force, I play almost all X-Force characters, things like that. Also, for me, a fun roster, I take characters that are very much underplayed. So I try to take characters that do not see a whole lot of, not a whole lot of table time in games. Guys that, you know, you just don't see around too much. You know, Punisher was one of my favorites to play that not many people do. I like Ant-Man, stuff like this. So those are really what I prioritize in my fun rosters. They're thematic, and I try to play underplayed characters and also underplayed tactics cards. Kind of like Ben said, it's fun to take those cards that are like dual tactics cards or cards you just don't see very much.
I think for me, I like to throw together like really stupid combinations. I think one of the things that one time, it was a while ago, I was playing I threw in like Captain America, Steve Rogers, Thanos, but I think it was just mine Thanos. This is before the all the changes. And then I threw in Deadpool and Captain Marvel. And basically my goal the whole game was just to do excessive amounts of violence. No real concept of you know, playing scenario. It's just throwing buckets of dice and seeing where they are and allowing Thanos to try to get you know, those bang bangs off. I brought Doom Prophecy into that list as well for Deadpool. Like, it was just a whole bunch of nonsense. This is old Steve too, before he got updated. So it's that kind of stuff. I think whenever I try to play fun, I'm just going inefficient dice pools and just throw. Sentinels is another one. I love to play Sentinels because they throw buckets of dice and on offense and on defense, and wherever it lands is wherever it lands.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, really fun to be able to mess around like that, like just try stuff, you know, that, like I said, normally doesn't hit the table, like you were saying sooner, and except, you know, Matt, what you were saying, you know, just throwing dice. Like, that's, I think, you know, that wholesome MCP where it's like, you know, no one's really trying to do super shenanigans, right? No gotchas, right? We're just kind of moving in and throwing dice, doing goofy stuff. Yeah.
With that, we're just going to take a quick break to have a message for our sponsor. This podcast would absolutely not be possible if it wasn't for our sponsors, our friends at Tritex Games and GameChefs.org. If you're looking to buy some sweet, sweet tabletop fun in the U.S., head over to GameChefs.org and use the promo code GamersGuild for 15% off, and if you're in the EU, head over to Tritex Games and get 5% off their already deeply discounted goodies using the code TritexGGCP5. And if you have a local game store, keep supporting them. We are all for that. You can help support the podcast by joining the Gamers Guild Patreon for as little as $1 a month or, wait for it, $12 a year. That's right. I can do math. Also, join us on our Discord and be a part of the Gamers Guild discussion for all things fun. And we're back, and we're going to be coming back with some listener questions. You can get you could submit your listener questions if you just join the Guild Hall, our Discord, which will be in the show notes. And then you can join up. You can either join as a Patreon to get access to some unique areas, or you could just join the conversation on the public portion of the Discord and submit your questions for our podcast. This one I submitted way too late, but we still got a plethora of questions for y'all to answer. The first one is from our co-host Merzane, Josh, and this one is for Ben, clearly. His question is, what turned him from right happy into right mad?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that people usually ask, you know, where did the name come from? The short story is many folks know that I am a United Methodist minister as well. And I was an angry kid growing up. I had a lot of anger issues. And so I, when I became a Christian and tried to change my life and be a better person. And so there was, you know, the righteousness, huh? See what I did there. Right. So, and then, you know, my nickname, all the way through college was Madness. And so Right Mad was born. And yeah, it's goofy. But one of my favorite is, Tim from the PCN network. Sometimes when I get a little too out of line, will call me Left Sad. So, you know.
Well, Mithrandir in the chat also posted that, was wondering if it was wrong mad to right mad.
Yes, yeah. There's lots of really there's a lot of fun ways to play with it, and yeah, it's Alyssa, my wife, has on many times threatened to change her screen name to match mine in goofy ways, just depending on her mood. So it was. So if you ever see Alyssa, my wife on there, or something similar, that's how you'll be able to tell it was her.
Ah, now I know the secret. I got the key. I'm gonna figure it out.
Yes,
it's basically my goal is just to figure out what significant others, you know, Discord names are on their Discord.
There you go. That's a unique goal, but it's a goal.
The next question is from Tabletop Dad. What character should be in every roster, and why is it Immortal Hulk? We'll start with whoever wants to take that one.
You got it, Sooner.
Well, hopefully the answer is no character should be in every roster. Either that or AMG's not doing their job correctly. Yeah, I mean, the hope is the game is balanced enough that no character should be in every roster. I mean, I know he's joking with this question, but yeah, if I had to pick one, my favorite character, gosh, we'll just say Black Panther because, you know, OG Wakanda.
Well, I think, what was it, when Jacob was doing the statistics back, you know, back, I think the highest one was it Okoye, right? Back
oh yeah. Then? Okoye, yeah. when she was broken, Okoye yeah. was the
and that
most
was like
popular.
In the '70s, right? Was it? I don't think she got higher than that, did she?
No, I don't believe so. But like '70s or she was in the '70s or '80s. Venom was really high too in like season 3.
Oh,
when like Web Warriors got all their releases. But yeah, Okoye was the most popular at one point, and 70 to 80% is pretty
it's
dang
pretty
bad.
Absurd. I mean, when yes. you're in a game that's north of 100 characters, and you have a tournament that is north of 100 players, north of 200 players and you're getting 70% of them choosing one of those characters is probably a sign that needs to be fixed.
Yeah, like Hulk is in, I think one of the recent big tournaments was like 50% of lists. Like, that's pretty absurd at this point in the game.
Yeah, that's fair. But yeah, clearly the answer is OG Daredevil should be in every roster. Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, in reality, I think I have Luke Cage in probably every roster I have put out there. Because I just want that protection. He offers so much protection. Except in Asgard. In that case, I have Scourge as my Luke Cage adjacent. But we'll follow up with the Tabletop Dad to say, real question, what makes up a good roster? Is it some cohesive theme? Is it a set of models to execute a strategy? And this is somewhat of a summary of what we've already talked about, but go ahead, Sooner.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is a summary. I think it's kind of more of the models to execute a strategy. I think you want to make a kind of what your list does, and you want to build some models that do that. This game, they've done a very good job. The balance is very good. So a lot of models, you know, Ben could choose one model and I choose another model, and basically doing, although being different on the table, both doing the same thing towards my strategy. So I don't think, you know, the beauty of this game is you can play a lot of different models and still execute towards your strategy. So I think that's probably the best way to make a good roster.
Well, if I could double down on it too, I think Sooner you mentioned it earlier that, and I don't know if we've talked a whole bunch about it, but you know, how your tactic cards that you're bringing with you also drastically change how you're trying to, you know, implement your strategy, right? You know, if you're bringing, you know, follow me, you know, and another restricted, right? So we know that you're going full board, you know, all gas, right? No stops, right? No breaks. But, you know, Sooner had mentioned that he's bringing predominantly defensive cards. So there's a different style there of what types of cards you're bringing to the table. And so that all has to work in the synergy of the style of what you're bringing. So yeah, if you're just kind of all over the place, then it's not really going to work well. And I don't think you're going to have a great time.
And sometimes, you know, bending into a balance can be appropriate as well, because one thing that I noticed in my messing around with Sentinels as an example is that I would face into people and they would talk about how the night, you know, the day before they played someone who played Sentinels and just crushed the Sentinels. And then they would play against me and it'd be a completely different scenario. And it's not because I'm a better player than those other players, because, you know, they told me who they were playing and they were playing good players, but sometimes they look at something like the Sentinels and they put in a lot of those highly offensive cards and bend into that offense, as opposed to me who threw in significant layers of defensive tech because I viewed the Sentinels to be very fragile and I wanted them to get their activations because there are so few of those activations. So they found it very difficult to play against me because I was playing a balanced approach. I was looking at my characters and saying, okay, the theme is that I need them to exist and I need them to not get dazed so easily. So I'm going to throw in, you know, Heroes for Hire. I'm going to throw in Escort to Safety. I'm going to throw in Sacrifice. I'm going to throw in all these other cards that keeps them from getting pummeled and by some X-23 who gets a dice spike, you know, Recalibration Matrix, another great card for that. So that sometimes you want to find a balance to make a good roster if you're finding that going, you know, all gas doesn't work. So the next question is from, and I apologize if I mispronounce your name, but I think it's Ryjin Clade, I think. Apologies. If I say it wrong, just let me know in the Discord and I will try and get it right the next time. He asked two questions. Well, the first one is, how do you pick your crises?
I think this is the hardest thing in probably roster creation, and definitely maybe one of the hardest things for newer players and kind of the hardest thing to quote unquote perfect is crisis picking, because there's a lot that goes into it. Obviously, you want to pick crisis that you're the roster you have built or good at. You want to, you know, you don't want to pick a bunch of E-shaped roster or secures when you don't have a very good fighting team and you have a very mobile team. So I think there's a lot of details that go in, one being what's the overall strategy of your team? Do you want to play more wide, or do you want to play more spread out, or are you looking to be bunched up with an E strategy or a E secure shape? But then you even have to take it further than that. You have to take it in threat level. Do you want to bring a certain crisis because of a threat level? Are you bad at that threat level? Is your team really good at that threat level? Is there a team that you're not very good at who struggles at a certain threat level? Or is there a team that struggles at low points that you want to help counter that team? So you want to pick low points or low threat. So that all plays in a part. And then, you know, do you generate power well? Do you want to take pay to flips because you generate power well, or you have good action economy so you can get to the pay to flips and flip them? Or so do you not do those things well and you don't want to do pay to flips? So I think it's the hardest thing, but I think overall you just want to look what synergizes the best with your strategy and go with that.
Yeah, I think a good point that you had made over actually in the Danger Room Discord, I saw you mentioning that, was that not always is the assumption that, you know, I go wide, so therefore I want wide scenarios. Sometimes, you know, a team like Shield that loves going a lot wider actually prefers the E shape, because they don't have a lot of great movement action economy. So they want to be able to get to stay where they are and force the fight and then attack in that E scenario. And a lot of times it takes a lot of practice. It takes a lot of learning what other people do. If you are choosing to focus on one affiliation, you know, reach out to people who have been playing this affiliation more often than you, and see why they choose those crises. What about those crises makes them good? And, you know, ask around, because, you know, you ask one person, their advice might be good, their advice might not be good. You don't know. They might be playing a bunch of people that aren't that great, and they think that their affiliation is great at something, but when they get matched up against X-Men, they find out they're really actually not that great at pay to flips, because you got to worry about those type of things. So that helps. And then once you get an idea, just go out and start playing it and see how that crisis gels with you. And what can you do to be better at that crisis? And what can you do to, or maybe that crisis just isn't for you at all. You don't, the old experience is one of the best ways to know that.
Yeah, and I think for me, one of the tricky parts about crisis selection is that there's a real high probability that it needs to change pretty consistently. You know, for example, I just took out Senators in my Brotherhood roster. And it was one of those interesting things where people for a while were like, man, Brotherhood, you know, Mystique-led Brotherhood on Senators with priority, I mean, is just a bully, right? And there's still like some cause, you know, for that. It's not that it just stopped being good, but all of a sudden now a lot of people were teching around that, figured out how to deal with it. So you can't really maybe exploit it as well. And I think if you're getting ready to go to a high tier, you know, event, that's something to be aware, right? Just because this was really good for a while doesn't mean that people aren't necessarily super prepared or have tech for it. That at least goes into under my consideration of when I take, a certain crisis. Now, it doesn't mean I'm going to take a bad crisis because, you know, just to throw a fastball, but at the same time, that's something to be aware of as the kind of the meta shifts.
Yeah, I had listened to today actually a podcast about Marvel Snap, and one of the interesting points that they made is you want to try to be a week ahead instead of a week behind. you know, the game is a living game that constantly shifts and changes. The meta constantly shifts and changes, and the meta at your tournament might be different than the meta of a tournament that you go to a month later. And you, it's one of the hardest things to do is to try to predict that meta. And usually the people who are successful are the ones that do predict the meta of a tournament, and trying to make your choices that keeps you ahead of the game, as opposed to, you know, making the choices that were good in the past, but now people have moved on and are able to counter what you're doing. But that's enough of that. That was a great one. Obviously, this is a topic that could be in its own episode in itself, choosing crises. And then he had another question. How do you figure out your core, or do you even play with core? Core being essentially three or so characters that you almost always have in your roster, and you sort of build out based on threat level from that core of characters. Ben, why don't you start?
Yeah, for me, the core really depends on the crisis, right? So I have Magneto, crisis cores, or like, all right, this is what if this is the setup that we've got, this is the core that I'm bringing. And the same thing, just to use the example, right? If Senators was out, all right, I have a pretty good chance of this is what I'm going to bring with my Mystique led team. It's also really important to figure out, what the matchup is going to be. There was a fair amount of time where I was really struggling because I was bringing the same core into Guardians and Senior Thanos. And that was really difficult for me because I was like, all right, this is the way to do it. And I was wrong. So being able to be flexible and recognize that, okay, just because the core is comfortable with you, the matchup is really bad. How do you kind of fluctuate and recognize when you need to shift? So I think there's a lot of intricacies of, when do you bring a core group of people? Again, at the same time, if you're bringing a kind of a thematic list or a list that has a certain goal with it, and that goal includes the core, then obviously you just slap that core down every single time and see what happens. That's what I did, with this Hydra High Council. It was like, I'm playing with at least 14 threat every game. Let's see what happens. I don't know if that's a great answer, but it's a answer.
Yeah, for me, I think for most of my rosters, my core is a two-person core, if that makes sense. I tend to have my leader, obviously, and then I usually have somebody that I'm basically bringing all the time, like Sam and Luke Cage, or Thor and Beta Ray Bill. There are some rosters that I kind of have a set core of, like Star-Lord, Rocket, Groot, as an example. Nick Fury, Iron Man, Howling Commandos is another example. But most of my teams tend to stick with like a two-person core, and then I build out there based off of what my opponent has and what the crisis selection is. What about you, Sooner?
So I do normally have core characters. I think, again, I sound like a broken record with this, but it really kind of comes down to my overall kind of strategy, what I'm going for. I think you guys said it best when you said a lot of times it can depend on what crisis you're playing. When I say I have a set of core characters, that doesn't mean I'm playing necessarily outside of the leader those characters every single game. It just means I'm playing them the bulk of most games. But depending on a crisis, I may have one core character who's played in a D, and then another core character who's played in an E. So I do have a core character, but it's not a set like, hey, I'm playing these three characters every single game.
All right. Very wise, very sage. So I think that about covers it up. I do want to make sure I give that shout out to Rylan, who asked a lot of excellent questions. He asked, where do you like to start with a roster? Pick a character, build around it, pick an affiliation, leadership, work with it at an angle, maybe starting with your crises you want to play and try to optimize your roster for it. And that was we put a very in-depth answer to that at the very beginning of the episode. about that. So if you skipped over all the episode, Rylan, rewind back to the beginning and we go into a lot of depth about how we start with our rosters as a general outline. And outside of that, that's basically our episode for this week. Ben, why don't you, where can the people find you?
Yeah, so my wife and I just started a brand new YouTube channel called Married Couple Protocol. We're doing battle reports. She's got some painting tutorials. Come check us out at that. It's brand new. We've got a couple of videos up, but we're looking to do some more. And we'll be doing some videos when we go to events and showing those things off. And yeah, so we're really excited about that, but that's where you can find me at, find me and my wife on Married Couple Protocol.
Excellent. And that link will be in the episode description.
I'm going to like it right now. I'm searching it as we speak.
Boom. That's what we like to hear.
And with that, I think that will call it to the end of our episode. Thank you so much, Ben, for coming and joining us for this chat about roster construction.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's always great to be on the Gamers Guild, and I'm just looking forward to seeing most everybody at NashCon. It's going to be great.
Yes, NashCon is coming up. I hope everyone enjoys it. Unfortunately, I'm not able to make it, but I'm hoping to make. Hopefully, I'll make it next year. That is my life goal.
Yay!
You like it.
That's all we have for this episode. So we are going to sign off for this week. I hope you got something out of this and you were able to move into your roster construction and with a much more focused approach or just to have a bunch of fun. So until next time,
keep on gaming.